Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Kimberly Atkins, and this is On Point. American values aren't what they used to be. That's what a new poll commissioned by the Wall Street Journal and NBC News has concluded. The survey found that millennials consider patriotism, religion, and having children as less important to them than young people did two decades ago. These were just some of the findings that could have significant implications for both the country and for the 2020 presidential candidate seeking to tailor a message of unity and shared national principles. This hour on Point, examining a dramatic change in what Americans value most. Join us. What values do you believe best define the national character? Have these changed over the last 10 or 20 years? What values are most important to you? Join us anytime on onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. With me from Arlington, Virginia, is Bill McInturff, a Republican pollster and co-founder of the Public Opinion Strategies. Bill, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Kimberly. Looking forward to the conversation.
And joining me from St. George, Maine, is Jeff Horwitt, a Democratic pollster and senior vice president at Heart Research Associates. Jeff, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Kimberly. Thanks for having me.
So both of you conducted this poll for the Wall Street Journal NBC News survey, and it concluded that younger Americans consider certain values, including patriotism, religion, and having children, as less important as young people did in 1998. So why now, Bill? Why is it now time to take a look at these findings again, this survey again? What was the timing?
Well, we did this survey in 1998, NBC Wall Street Journal did this survey where they looked at key values. It's a generation later. It's 21 years later. And it seemed like a terrific time to track American attitudes. And this is a country where we have a capacity for change. And we wanted to see what endured, meaning that our value we place in hard work, and then what changed. And you've really quickly and well hit some of the major findings of the survey in terms of major changes over a generation.
And Jeff, tell us about some of these major top line findings that you found.
Well, I think there are two things that emerge here. And one, I think we'll talk about the generational differences and the change over time. But it's also telling that, you know, when we look at the top values that people care about, it's hard work, tolerance for others, and financial security. And if you look at the data here, these are areas that are not viewed as, Americans don't view these as accomplishments, things that we really have achievements on, but really highlight the strains in our society. So for hard work, 89% say that this is very important. Very important, but 70% of Americans say that they feel angry about our political system and feel that, you know, the power in Washington and Wall Street is working to help the, you know, political establishment and insiders rather than helping people get ahead. On financial security, 79% say this is very important, but a majority, 56%, are anxious or uncertain about the economy and their own situation, you know, being able to pay bills and day-to-day living costs. Mm. And we have 67% who don't feel confident about the next generation being better off than they are. And lastly, on tolerance, we have 80% who say this is very important, but race relations are at very low levels, including record lows for African Americans. And 56% say race relations have gotten worse since Donald Trump became president. So we have majorities who want these qualities to be very important parts of America. But in each case, they see an America that is falling short of the country of their ideals.
And Bill, talk a little bit more about some of the factors driving these changes that Jeff was just talking about. What's behind it?
Well, that's a little more speculative. I don't think that's something we can say with certainty. Look, we have an emerging generation, the Generation Z and Millennials. They've came through during a very difficult, what we call the Great Recession. We have lots of data that say that they're different in terms of the numbers that are not attending any religious service. They're different in terms of their lack of economic confidence. They're also the most racially diverse generation in America, where 40% are African American, Latina, or Asian. That's a significant shift and change in terms of what's coming in this country, and they do bring different values. This generation has very high support for gay marriage and is very concerned about climate change. And in this country, it's this generation that's becoming the lodestone. They are now becoming the largest part of our generation. And in this country, it's the next generation of people that kind of set the fabric and set the tone. And I think the sort of value structure and the attitudes that this generation is bringing provide a really important signal for where our country's heading over the next 10 or 20 years.
And this poll has gotten a lot of notice this week, I think, for the reasons that you were laying out. Conservative podcast host Ali Beth Stuckey told Fox and Friends yesterday that the results of the poll were unsurprising, and her generation of millennials are a generation, quote, obsessed with self-love, with self-care, and with self-fulfillment. Let's listen.
Young people are missing out on some of the greatest sources of joy. Mm-hmm. Anything that gives you satisfaction requires sacrifice, a relationship with God, having kids, being a part of something that's bigger than you, like the greatest country on earth. It's really disappointing for me to see, but like I said, not surprising.
So, Jeff, is this what the poll, is this what these findings are showing, that millennials just are misplacing their values, as Stuckey is essentially putting it, and not really valuing the things that give them joy in life, like faith and family and patriotism?
Well, no. I mean, I think, look, every generation is different. And as Bill points out, this is the future here. And we don't know what this generation is going to look like 20, 21 years from now when we do this again. To test these results, these questions again. But I think Bill's point about this, what this generation has been through, is very, very important. And look, the last time in our NBC Wall Street Journal polling, we had more people say the direction of the country was headed in the right direction was January 2004. That was George W. Bush's first term. Barack Obama was a state senator, and there was no baseball in Washington. So a lot has changed since then. But the one thing that's happened is that the country has been off on the wrong track for the vast majority of this generation's life, and it impacts things. And one of the things that, you know, Bill has talked about is the idea of religion and how this generation does look very different than other generations in terms of church attendance. It is interesting to note here that, you know, and Bill can talk about this as well, since I know this is an interest of him, but look, in 2000 we had 41% of Americans who said they attended church on a weekly basis. Now that's 29%. And more 18 to 34-year-olds reported in a recent survey for us that they play a multiplayer video game like Fortnite and then attend church on a weekly basis. Mm. So very different life experiences right now, but we don't know how this is going to play out in the future.
Well, there's one millennial who has talked quite a bit about faith, and that is Democratic presidential candidate Pete Buttigieg, also the mayor of South Bend, Indiana. He differs from the pack. Here he is in March explaining the importance of religion to him in an appearance on the show The View.
When I go to church and the scripture that I hear, it is about protecting the poor. It is about looking after those who are marginalized in society. There's a lot about welcoming the stranger, which to me includes welcoming the immigrant. You know, so much of what Christ's teachings are about have to do with the way that we take care of the least among us.
So, Bill, I've been in Washington a long time. It seems that there is a reluctance among a lot of politicians to talk too much about religion, particularly on the Democratic side. If we have more examples like Mayor Buttigieg, might that change? Might that change the way young people think or talk or relate to religion?
Well, that's certainly possible. Just again, I want to stick to what I know, which is the polling that we did. we tested the word religion 21 years ago. And of course, religion can mean different things for different people. We meant it as sort of a structural belief in terms of attendance at religious service. But one of the things we did in this survey was we put in the phrase belief in God, because there was a – when we designed the poll, there was a discussion about, well, okay, you can – religion may not be the same thing as belief in God. And the one of the really fascinating findings of the survey was that within the margin of error of a poll, there was no difference. So these numbers are not a reflection of people's views about the importance to them of organized religion. It is sort of a place setting for how they value religion or belief in God. We also went back and compared. And there were these same gaps by religion and children in 20 years ago between generations and by party. But I looked at that now after we released the poll, given some of the good questions that have been asked, and the gaps today are bigger than they were 20 years ago. So Jeff is right. We've been tracking the doubling in the percentage of people that say they have they do not attend religious service. And I think all of this data is telling us directionally that a country that has had a very, very strong religious tradition is moving, I think, arguably moving in a different direction. And they're giving us very clear signals that this is dropping as something is in terms of how they describe as being very important to them personally.
Hmm. So, Jeff, in the few seconds before we go to break, talk about this. I mean, some folks may think, look, young people are always less religious than older people. Is this, in a way, a continuation?
I think it could be, but I think I also want to touch on one other thing that Mayor Buttigieg talked about was helping others and looking out for others. And I think one of the encouraging results from this poll is we have a 15-point increase overall in community involvement. And that is something that we see across the board, whether it's young people or old people. And so I think there's a lot of tough data here for Americans to digest and what this means to the country. And I think that's an encouraging finding.
All right. We're discussing the values that Americans consider to be the most important to them. You can join the conversation. What do you attribute to the decline in religious and patriotic commitment among younger Americans? How do you define your own personal values? Are they consistent with your generation, whether you're a baby boomer, Generation X, Millennial, or the newest edition, Generation Z? We value all your opinions. I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast. Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're discussing how personal values have evolved for America's younger generation compared to just two decades ago. You can join the conversation. Where does your generation stand on values such as patriotism, religion, and having children? What are the values that you believe a successful presidential candidate will need to embody in their message to the nation during the 2020 campaign? Follow us on Twitter and on Facebook at On Point Radio. With me is business Bill McInturff, co-founder and managing partner of Public Opinion Strategies, and Jeff Horowitt, senior vice president at Hart Research Associates. They conducted this poll that we're talking about today. Also joining us now from Alexandria, Virginia, is Theodore Johnson, senior fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice. His research and writing focuses on the interaction of policy with politics and race and racial disparities. Ted, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Kimberly. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So, Ted, I want to bring you into this conversation, but first I want to kick it off with some sound from Peggy Noonan in a commencement speech at the University of Notre Dame in May. The noted columnist and former speechwriter for former President Ronald Reagan called for a return to certain national values that she feels have been left behind.
I believe America needs help right now, and America knows it. But we've been living through, as a nation, for perhaps 30 years, an ongoing cultural catastrophe. Illegitimacy, the decline of faith, low family formation, child abuse and neglect, drugs, poor education.
Ted, what do you think about that? Do you agree that we're in a cultural catastrophe right now?
I would not go that far. And it's interesting, Peggy Noonan is, as you said, Reagan's speechwriter, often had Reagan talk about America as the shining city on a hill. And this is what sociologists call American civil religious language. It sort of casts our pride in America, our patriotism, as a quasi-religious endeavor. And where I think she goes too far, though, is tying one's pride in America or sense of belonging here to a whole host of public policy issues that aren't necessarily attached to one's love for the country. So I do think there is an issue with, I do think there is a need for an American civil religion, something, the ideas, the principles that bind us together are, you know, we are democratic strangers in search of a civic friendship, and American civil religion gives us the context for that. But tying some of the social harms and inequalities in our society to this love for country, I think, is a leap too far.
And Ted, I want to get to this idea because we're talking about these shifts that have happened over decades. But is there expected to be some change in values in America when the demographics of America are changing, the population is changing, technology is changing, the world is changing? Is it necessarily a bad thing that the values that Americans value most might change too?
I don't think so. And, I'm not sure that our values are changing. I think if you ask Americans if they care about equality and liberty and equal opportunity, those sorts of things, I think there's, you know, a broad consensus that, yes, we all want that. What we differ on now is the expression of those things. And so where our belief in those things often were attached to institutions like public school, churches, etc., now Americans are becoming less institutional, less attached to institutions, less attached to place, and developing more smaller group attachments in book clubs and athletic clubs and yoga things. And as the pollster said in the previous segment around community involvement, those things are up. So it's not that we are distancing ourselves from each other. We are becoming unmoored from the traditional institutions that have founded American society and sort of been the vessels by which our values have been communicated. So I don't think that we've lost I don't think we have changed our values or have less respect for these traditional values, mm-hmm. but we just exercise them in a way that is new for this generation relative to previous ones.
All right. We have a lot of callers wanting to get in on this conversation. Troy is calling from South Reading, Virginia. Hi, Troy.
Hi. So
Troy, you're breaking up a little bit. Are you on a cell phone? Can you speak right in the phone?
Yeah. Yes. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. So extend it out a little.
All right, Troy, sorry, we can't, you're breaking up, and so we're gonna move on. We're going to go to Supriya, who's calling from Lexington, Massachusetts. Hi there.
Hi. So what I wanted to say is that I think millennials, and I'm 32, so I'm like right smack in there, millennials, they're just more about personal responsibility. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you consider religion or patriotism your key values, you're kind of looking to those to tell you how to treat other people. And I think instead millennials, they're more interested in looking towards themselves to want to treat people fairly with equality, to care for the sick and the poor and the like. So instead of needing, the previous guy was saying, instead of needing institutions, we are really looking for ourselves. And technology has also given us the chance to hear voices that we wouldn't normally hear. Mm. So that has helped us to increase our awareness of other people and our desire to help them.
Well, Supriya, thanks for that call. I want to go to our pollsters to get an idea as to how that sentiment about self-responsibility, individual responsibility, might be measured. Jeff, what do you think about that?
Well, I think, you know, as pollsters, the best thing to do is to, you know, ask actual Americans. And I think we just heard from Supriya, and I think that's a great insight there, because in our data really does bear this out. If one of the items we asked in the poll was how important self-fulfillment is, and in fact, for millennials, they rate this higher than any other generation. 72% say this is very important for them, compared to 59% for both Boomer, Silent Generation, and Gen X. So you are seeing, again, this is a different, and it makes sense, because we talked about this up front, about this is a generation that has gone through very difficult times economically, erosion and confidence in institutions. So it does follow that this generation would be more likely to focus on themselves when you see that they've been let down by a lot of American society.
Bill, do you have something to add to that?
Just this is a case where there's not, where in an interesting way, in 1998, when we asked about the word self-fulfillment, 75% of people 18 to 29 said that was very important to them. Today, 18 to 29, that's 72%. So within that age cohort, 21 years ago and today, that's a value that in that age group in both surveys was higher than any other age bracket. So I do think that, look, there are generational changes. As people age, we shift, we change, and what we say is very important can differ. And so I I'm not suggesting that we can take a straight line from this data. Mm-hmm. But as I said, the shift in something like having children is just so different than 20 years ago. And by the way, birth rates in this country are down. So in this case, in this generation, because this is the generation that's having children, their self-describe, what's important to them, is something you can actually measure in terms of an aggregate across our country in terms of dropping birth rates. So it's Jeff and I have also been asked, how do you try to project these what's important to me to how it affects our culture? And that's one where, as I said, you can watch these lower numbers. So, for example, in 18, 29-year-olds, 20 years ago, 51% said having children was very important to them. Today, it's 31. So in the same age bracket, there's a 20-point drop. Self-fulfillment was the same, 20-point drop in having children. Birth rates are down. So we're seeing not only a self-description change, but an actual we're witnessing this sort of change in behavior in terms of how many children we're having.
And Ted, how much of that is a reflection of society? I mean, I'm thinking about folks in my parents' generation who were having children in their teens and 20s, and then people in the generation after that having kids in their 30s, and now people having children in their 40s for a lot of reasons, including a change in opportunities, educational opportunities, professional opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. And so the younger generation now is not as stable in a particular place as previous generations. They are much more mobile than other generations. They carry much more student debt than other generations. And so when you've got this high financial debt, no roots, and you're sort of unmoored from institutions, even when you do settle somewhere, that doesn't lend itself to family establishment or raising children. That mobility makes it difficult to adhere to some of the financial and time and stability requirements that families often thrive under. So it's not surprising. But I will say that self-fulfillment isn't the same thing as selfishness. And as the caller was saying, that they find fulfillment in community service or helping others. So it doesn't mean that they've turned inwards and away from society. It just means that they're looking for self-fulfillment in different ways than previous generations have.
I want to focus in on one issue that Bill and Jeff looked at in this poll, and that's patriotism. Here's former Republican New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg sharing his view on patriotism from his 2017 commencement address at Villanova University.
Patriotism requires ethics, and ethics are at the heart of America's power and purpose. Now, I know prejudice against other groups will probably always be with us, and far too often in our history we have tolerated it and even legislated it. But the reason America grew into such a great country is that in times of crisis, the values that inspired our Declaration of Independence have been our North Star.
Bill, how do you define patriotism when you're assessing what Americans think about it?
I think that's, again, where Jeff and I would talk about the limits of the study. That word can mean different things to different people. And Jeff and I have witnessed that during the President Obama's era, Republicans and Democrats reacted very differently to terms. And it's very possible that patriotism during the era of Donald Trump could mean very different things to people, which is one reason we see these massive differences by political affiliation around that word. The way I look at the poll personally, I focus probably more on the children and religion, belief in God, because I think there's a more stable comparison from 1998 than there might be to a word like patriotism. Mm. Jeff, that's any other thoughts on Kimberly's question?
No, I think it's a great question. I think Bill, I think that the analysis there is very important. I think we just put when patriotism is a unique characteristic here. We didn't delve deeper into it, so I think that's exactly right. I did want to just follow on one thing that Ted brought up on the student loan debt. In the survey, we did also ask respondents if someone in their household has more than $20,000 in student loan debt. Overall, 29% of Americans say yes to this. For 18 to 34-year-olds, that's 35%. And 47% of 18 to 34-year-olds say they would have difficulty paying an unexpected bill for $500. So this goes to the economic anxiety and the point that, you know, we think about having children, bringing someone new into the world, you don't want to bring them into a situation where you may not be able to provide for them.
All right, I'm going to go back to our lines. Mark is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark.
Hello. I'd like to say something about the topic of patriotism. I was a draftee during the Vietnam War, and I got out when Nixon changed the Army to a volunteer Army, and I saw an incredible change. And my point is that I think there should be a national draft for men and women who are able-bodied, mentally capable, to do some kind of service to the country for 2 years. Again, not necessarily military, but it can be community, it can be working in nursing homes, it can be any number of choices that our country needs help and service in. And anyone between 18 and 28 would be required to offer 2 years to the country. And that builds patriotism, because when I was in, it was an amazing cross-section of America.
Mm, Mark, and thank you. Thank you for that call. I want to give Ted some time to talk about this issue of patriotism and how, Mark brings up the fact that he's a veteran. It occurs to me that since the draft has gone away, even in our elected officials, our presidents, far fewer veterans are taking these roles. And do you think that's shaping how the country thinks about patriotism?
I think the primary shaper of patriotism, how we think of patriotism today, is through a partisan lens, as some of the polling suggests. You know, when a Democrat is in the White House,
Republicans' sense of patriotism feels a little bit lower and vice versa when a Republican's in the White House. And there's two things happening here. One is we tend to conflate the word patriotism with one's love for country. And patriotism, which is typically defined as like having pride in the nation, is often displayed publicly as an expression of that pride. And if you don't display it in accordance with the traditional rituals, like standing during the national anthem or attending a 4th of July picnic or observing a moment of silence during Memorial Day or September 11th memorial, then you're seen as not being patriotic. So, and what has happened is the parties have figured out how to use displays of patriotism as a cudgel to divide us instead of the principles of our nation to unite us. And this isn't new. And in the 1790s, the Declaration of Independence really rose to national public consciousness because the two parties at the time were fighting over who respected the document more. Before then, it wasn't the sacred text that was revered. So the partisan bickering around patriotism and one's expressions of love for the country has always been used for political expediency and for electoral purposes. But one's love for the country, I don't think that needs to be manufactured through a draft. I'm a veteran as well. I volunteered in 94 to go serve. And I do love the country, but serving didn't make me love the country more than, say, Martin Luther King loved the country, who never served, or through my, you know, my mother and father, who never served, but were tax-paying, you know, community-loving citizens their whole life. So I think that I don't know that you can manufacture patriotism by mandating service. But I think there is something to be said about civic education and teaching us the importance of values and adhering to those values as an expression of pride in America and love for country. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to hug the flag every time you pass by.
All right, we're going to pause for a moment. We're discussing the conclusions of a new Wall Street Journal NBC News poll that uncovers changes in what Americans value most. You can join the conversation. What's your perspective on values in America today? Have you noticed a change in your community, in your state, or nationally over the last decade or go? Is there a political leader or candidate in the presidential race that you believe understands what Americans value most? I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Kimberly Atkins. We're discussing American values following the conclusion of a recent Wall Street Journal NBC News survey. You can join the conversation. What questions do you have for my guests? Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With me is Bill McInturff, co-founder and managing partner of Public Opinion Strategies, Jeff Horowitz, Senior Vice President at Hart Research Associates, and Ted Johnson, Senior Fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice. So I want, with all the guests, to get to intangibles about what people use in deciding what's valuable. And I want to start with a clip from actress Viola Davis in her Barnard commencement address in May. She talked about the importance of embracing the complexities of our personal histories, both good and bad. She said not to forget the parts that trouble us and went on to say this.
Forget any evidence in my family of mental illness, violence. Forget anything in me that will get in the way. Forget my fear, my pain. Both dead end. Both result in well-intentioned, very bright, enthusiastic people doing nothing. How about this as a novel idea? How about owning it?
Ted, I want to jump up from that and say, is there too much pressure on Americans to focus on values like patriotism and having children and other things and not embrace their own individual stories and focus on that more?
I do think that there is a pressure for the younger generation to conform to what older generations believe is the right way to live life. I do think, you know, parents may push their kids to go to college and to get jobs and to get married and have, you know, have grandkids. And that social pressure isn't done out of malice, of course. It's done because it's out of a sense of nostalgia that the older generations best days were its younger days, and they sort of want those best days for their children. I mean, this is what Donald Trump was able to tap into to some extent when, in his slogan, you know, make America great again, it's this sense of nostalgia that things in the past were always better than they were today. And so anything that's wrong with our current moment is because of a departure from the past. And rather, I think what younger generations know, and we were all in the younger generation or once were, we understand that our happiness isn't rooted necessarily in replicating what our parents did. Mm-hmm. It's in finding our own path. And to the extent that social pressures force us or try to force us to conform to an older notion of what happiness is supposed to look like, what the American dream is supposed to look like, I don't think that's valuable at all. And to the, you know, Viola Davis's words, we should find our own path, and it's possible to do that and live in a stable society and be, you know, folks that love the country only if public policy is willing to adapt to this new way of living. And that's where the long pole in the tent is. That's mm-hmm. where the problem resides, is that policy doesn't adapt to each generation.
Mm, let's go back to the phones. Kim is calling from Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Kim.
Hi. I'm calling because my children are concerned about climate change and cite that reason for not having children. They are seeing evidence of it now. And just overpopulation in general. We just can't live the way we used to live, you know, with consumption and burning fossil fuels when there's so many people on this planet.
All right, Kim, thank you so much for that call. I want to go to another caller, Michael, who's calling from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Hi, Michael.
Hi. I was thinking that these declines that we're seeing in faith in country, faith in patriotism, faith in faith, are based on abuses of power. We look at the child sex abuse scandal. We look at underfunded public institutions via, you know, political gridlock. And I'm wondering if we're going to be looking at a decline in faith in corporations because they're not giving us raises. They're not giving us stability, and they're not giving us a better, greener future.
Mm. All right. Thanks for that call, Michael. Bill, these are two callers speculating mm-hmm. that millennials are reacting to other forces in their change and in how they express their values. What do you think about that?
Well, I think they're correct. Jeff and I also do a different sequence, which is how much confidence you have in institutions. So we've done that over 20 or 30 years. And some of the – and he's right. Major corporations are down. So is the church. So the gentleman's – Michael's point is, well, is exactly what we're seeing in the data. And over – and over these 20, 25 years, the only institutions that are better and more respected – and Dr. Johnson was a key part of one, and thank you for your service, is the American military. And so other than the military, including the media and everything else, has dropped in public esteem and confidence. To the other caller, Mark, I worked for John McCain for years, Senator McCain, to try to work on national service. There's a group called Service Year Alliance, which is once again trying to create an economic incentive for people in that age bracket to do a year of work, and as Dr. Johnson said, not just the military. And I mentioned with millennials the way that climate change is a very different issue, and it does have And it is, and Kim's point is something we certainly have heard and seen in the data from that generation in terms of a significant concern and a concern, as she said, that is affecting their personal behavior.
I want to talk a little bit about how our leaders affect the way Americans feel about American values. And on the issue of religion, the president, President Trump, said he relied on the support of conservative Christians to win the White House in 2016. But here is then presidential candidate Trump in 2015 speaking with pollster Frank Luntz about his own religious convictions.
Have you ever asked God for forgiveness?
I'm not sure I have. I just go and try and do a better job from there. I don't think so. If I do something wrong, I think I just try and make it right. I don't bring God into that picture.
I don't bring God into the picture. Ted, do you think that our leaders, I mean, in the past, we've seen leaders speak in much more glowing terms about the effect of religion on them. Do you think that's having an effect on the way that Americans, millennials or others, view religion?
I do. And so, you know, the thing about institutions is that they're not flat. They're often accompanied by hierarchy, and which means there are directors, there are leaders. And in this new version of America where institutions aren't as important, we're seeing public-based movements like Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, the Tea Party movement, that are essentially leaderless movements that empowers everyone within the collective with some sense of agency to make a change. And so not only are institutions less important, but leaders become less important or less of a reason to become part of an institution. And when you look at some of the scandals that institutions, traditional institutions, have had, and to include our government and sort of the lack, people's lack of faith in government, it's because of the way the leaders have conducted themselves. Now, I think very quickly on Trump and Republicans, the Christian evangelicals have voted for Republicans for some time now, and that's not going to change just because they may not like the current standard bearer for the party as much. In fact, they show up, they make a larger share of the electorate than their disproportionate share of the electorate, and they vote overwhelmingly for Republicans. So Trump was in no danger of losing electoral support from that share of the electorate in his remarks. But I think what is happening is the populace is points to this as another example of why they've lost faith in institutions and the people that lead them.
Jeff, when you're conducting research into things like values, we've been talking a lot about the generational divide, but what other factors might be driving these differences? Perhaps cultural divides within the country, geographical divides, you know, rural versus urban. What other factors might be at play besides age?
Yes, well, I think there is a significant urban-rural divide, Kimberly, and I think that's something we're seeing play out in our politics, but also our values and our life experiences. You know, people who live in rural America have very different life experiences than those who live in our cities. And so part of this also is partisan. The rural and urban parts of the country become very divided in partisan terms. But, you know, if you look, for example, at belief in God, 64% of rural Americans say this is very important compared to 39% of those in urban areas. And, you know, having children, there's an 11-point gap there, where in rural America that's more important than in cities. So that is one. And then the other part of this is also we do see this as a very political division as well, and I think that plays in our politics and looking to 2020.
Isabella is on the line from Newport, Tennessee. Hi there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
My comment is regarding the decline of the importance of religion to millennials, or I'm 31, so folks my age. And I grew up in the Bible Belt here in rural East Tennessee, and I did not attend a conservative Christian church. I attended a really progressive denomination of Christian church growing up. And so as time has gone on, I have not found that I feel like I need to disassociate myself with my church the way a lot of my other friends who grew up in churches where the Bible was interpreted a lot more literally and they were harsh on members of the LGBTQ community. Their messaging is just off for for folks our age. We're seeing the world differently. And so, you know, I think for me, I relate so much more to a church where, like Mayor Pete was talking about, that kind of messaging is actually true and on, and people are actually helping each other. Mm. So.
Thank you for that call. Bill, you talked a little bit about how people feel about institutions. It seems like that's reflective of that.
Yeah, I thought she spoke really well. Isabella spoke really well to describe some of the reasons we're watching this plummeting number in terms of people in this age bracket saying that religion is important to them. As I said, it's comparing the same age 21 years ago, there's a 20-point drop. So this is – and look, one of the things that has made America very different than other countries in the world is there is sort of a religious pulse in this country that's been part of the fabric of the country. From this data and from where we're headed – I believe we're going to look back in 20 years and the country will look and feel and seem different because that religious pulse that's been part of the background of this country is going to be a far weaker factor in terms of our day-to-day life in a generation. Things happen. There's always counter pushes. But basically, from this data and from the longer term trends we're seeing in Western Europe, because a lot of what we're watching here happened in Europe, but it happened a longer. But we're watching this data here look like Western European data of a generation ago. So we've sort of watched in Western European countries the same sort of decline. In religion, children, and some of these other factors. I think we're seeing the same trends here.
All right. Brian is on the line from Buffalo, New York. Hi, Brian.
Hello. I just had a quick comment on identity. I consider myself to be a millennial, and the difference between my generation potentially and other generations is this idea of soul purpose and how true resonance comes from within. It's about discovering yourself first, making yourself better, and then branching out and connecting with other groups. I think the difference is in prior generations is that it was the other way around, where you found a group that you fit into, but you had to conform to it. So you didn't really get to be yourself, and you never really found out what you had and what you were great at. Mm. And this generation is a lot different. I think we're all about real soul purpose and really trying to find our true who we are exactly, and then being the best that we can be, making everything else great around us.
Jeff, soul purpose. I don't know if you asked a question about that in your poll, but how do you measure that? And moving forward, how do we continue to measure how we feel about America and values, given what you've heard from callers like Brian?
Well, I think, you are a creature of circumstance and where you grew up, when you grew up, and this generation has grown up in a different time, where we do have the erosion of institutions, and there is a sense that you have to look out for yourself. And there are also, in terms of the events that are going on here, there is not a great unifying event here like World War II or the Great Depression that really calls the country together in a cohesive way. And in fact, in our politics, we're seeing more division. So it makes sense that we're seeing this sort of looking inward and looking at the community level rather than at the national level at this point.
Ted, in the few seconds we have left, what does this poll leave you with in your understanding of where we are right now in terms of our American values?
Yeah, I think our values are in a good spot. I just think we are not expressing our adherence to those values in ways that American society traditionally has. Though church attendance, religiosity is down, people are now saying, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual. And I think we've sort of gotten that from some of the self-fulfillment pieces. So it's not that we've abandoned a belief in God. It's not that we've abandoned a belief in America or its principles. It's that we're just dissatisfied with the previous way of expressing that belief through institutions, faith in leaders, and adherence to some national ritual or religious ritual. And so now we just have to think about new ways
ways to take advantage, to leverage these newer expressions of faith and love for country.
All right, that's Ted Johnson, Senior Fellow at the Brennan Center for Justice. Thank you for joining us. And Bill McInturff, co-founder and managing partner of Public Opinion Strategies. Thank you for joining us today, Bill. And Jeff Horowitz, Senior Vice President at Heart Research Associates. Pleasure to have you with us as well.
Pleasure. Thank you, Kimberly.
You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. And you can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm Kimberly Atkins. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.